Osiris.
Hey, this is Brendan from Umphrey's McGee. This podcast is part of the Osiris podcast family. Osiris is a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans with conversation, commentary, and of course, lots of music.
Osiris.
Hey everybody, it's Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 149, part 2. Matt and I are back. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
We are going to resume our journey through February of 2003, and one day of March, I should add.
Yes, yes. They've cleared us to re-enter the building after the kitchen fire that we had to evacuate for, so we're back up and ready to go.
We're ready. Before we get into it, Matt, do you want to remind people just quickly about the Big Cypress thing that we talked about last time?
Yeah. So, we talked about last week, we've got a big episode or series of episodes really all across the Osiris podcast network, later this year. And we want your input. So we've gotten a lot of great submissions so far. Keep them coming. If you were at Big Cypress, share your story by taking an audio recording of yourself, sharing the cool and funny details of your voyage there, your experience, what the scene was like, all that good stuff. And send that to bigcypress@osirispod.com. Send us your contact info so we know how to get in touch with you if we want to hear more from you. Otherwise, thank you very much, and you'll start to hear some of that hopefully starting this summer.
Yeah, really exciting. That's going to be really cool. We have a lot of stuff planned, so thanks for participating. Send us whatever you got. So Matt, we are still in Cincinnati. We haven't been able to leave Cincinnati since we last recorded. It's been, our families have missed us.
Yes, we are stuck here in Cincinnati, but ready to plow forward.
So this, as you mentioned, made reference to at the beginning, there was a fire at the hotel that I guess the band and a bunch of fans were staying at the night after the first night, right?
Yeah. I think it was like the middle of the night. The hotel was evacuated. There was actually a legit fire in the kitchen. If you go back and listen to Trey's solo show from last February 2018 in Charlotte, he told the story from his perspective about being up quite late, having a little party in his room, and the experience that he had having to evacuate the hotel with a whole bunch of fans and standing out on the street there. So
oh man, probably a really small party he was having.
I'm sure it was just a few guests.
Yeah, you know, listening to some classical music and having a glass of wine after the show.
Absolutely.
As you do. So they open up with a sloth. Everyone, the fans, the band, sleeping all day, right? That was a nice nod to that. But the show does not suffer from a lack of energy.
No, I mean, that's the crazy thing is, like, we talked about the night before sort of being a little lackluster, especially in the second set. You'd think that the show after, you know, they had this big disruption in the middle of the night and stuff might be the one where it's a little sloppy or crazy. And it's quite the opposite. They come out swinging, and this is probably one of the strongest shows on the whole tour.
Yeah, definitely the Piper in the first set into Weekapog, according to Fishnet, the first ever standalone Weekapog, which is interesting. That jam is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. The Piper gets really ripping. We talked about, you know, this being an era of really, really great Pipers on the last episode. This one, no exception. They get cooking at such a high tempo, and Trey initiates the segue into Weekapog. They're playing so fast that Trey wants them to slow down, and you can actually kind of hear him laughing on the recording, at least the soundboard recording, as he's trying to get Fishman to slow down, and the rest of the band just isn't having it. They keep going at this crazy fast pace. You can't even imagine how Mike plays Weekapog that fast. It's a great little combo, especially for so early in the show.
It's such a great, yeah, really good. And the and a mid first set, Walls of the Cave after that, which is another kind of pretty high energy song, really long, but again with a little bit more space.
Yeah, and I think this is the longest Walls of the Cave ever. It's like 22 minutes long or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's a section during the jam that almost sounds like Woman from Tokyo at a certain point, which actually is kind of one of those grooves that popped up a couple different times during the tour. There's at least one Piper where that sort of happens. And also the bathtub gin from the very first night of the tour, it sort of comes up. But like we said about some of the other 2.0 jams, really long, it kind of keeps pushing forward, but they don't really go anywhere with it. They kind of stay inside of the walls of the cave, you know, trudging forward, rocking groove, kind of thing, but it's great. And it's a fun listen.
And as noted by Fishnet, it's sort of a type one jam, right? I think that's what you're saying. It's just like keeps going forward, not really stretching into new territory, but long.
Yes, exactly.
And then something that I would have enjoyed had I been there is the Mountains in the Mist right after Walls of the Cave, but you know, again, odd placement with right before a sample in the jar closer.
yeah again, like, you know, the 22 minute Walls of the Cave maybe should have been the set closer instead. But then you've got Mountains in the Mist, which is a great cool down song, but Sample in a Jar to close the set. I'm sure there was probably some disappointed jaded vets at that point.
I mean, the, I don't know, you know, you have that, what you described last time was the, you know, the people who were there for the jams and the people who were, you know, who were otherwise like just pissed off because they weren't hitting all the notes. So it depends which Depends which person you're talking to, right?
Or we're just excited to be there because, you know, they either hadn't seen fish before or hadn't seen fish in a couple of years.
Yeah, that's wild. The last real set closer of for Sample in a Jar was the second set of Alpine 04. So, you know, that's you got to go back a ways and have some weird stuff going on. Sorry, Tweeter Center 04, but Alpine 04 had a sample encore, which is always lovely. There's just, man, some strange stuff there in 2.0. So 03 and 04, as Matt said last time, I think they were just sort of figuring it out as they went, right? Song selection wise.
Yeah. And you see some, I don't know. I mean, maybe some of it was like deliberate or a mood, because like one of the other things that I see that I would call strange song placement that pops up a bunch of times in 2003 is like a mid second set bug. You know, it's a great song, and it gets to really cool places. You know, but middle of a second set is like a little bit of a strange placement for it, but it happened a lot.
Yeah. Well, speaking of bug, the second set, so another 5-song second set, this is one of the best second sets, one of the best sets, I think, of 2.0, right? This is just, it's legendary. There's the tube opener is just, it's great. It just feels like it's so high energy. It's such a great opener. And then the Bathtub Gin, which is just amazing.
Yeah, the tube is like, I mean, people would just kill to hear a tube like this these days. It's not like crazy long, but it definitely jams. It gets really funky. Surprised that they actually kind of bring it around to the ending. There's a point at which you almost think that they're just not going back because they kind of depart and head off into the ether. But then this gin, man, and it, I mentioned on the last episode, you know, Bathtub Gin might be the best song of the tour in terms of jams. And in a tour and a year of great bathtub gins, this is maybe the best. I mean, probably the best, really.
Oh, man, it's so hard. This and the Nassau one are just both incredible. But that's actually, maybe, Matt, we should someday do a Bathtub Gin episode as we did the two-part Tweezer episode, because there's so much. These two in this month, I think, are probably in the top 10, top 15 of all time for me.
Yeah.
I love, there's so many Bathtub Gin jams that I love, but this one is just great. It's one of those jams where like every note is, you know, in my memory. I think I've listened to it, you know, enough times to have everything sort of burned in there. But the whole set is really, really good. And the Bowie is just, again, super intense, really just ferocious. It's just a really great, really great set.
Yeah, I thought, you know, to get back to the gin for just a second, actually, really, the gin and the Bowie almost feel like throwback jams because the gin gets into like almost summer 95 territory where you almost hear these hey-hole exercises of, you know, the band trying to interlock all these parts that they're playing. Really, really, really awesome stuff. And then the Bowie, it doesn't stray away from Bowie. It still gets from point A to point B, but it takes its time. Just guitar heroics by Trey. This to me sounded like, you know, once again, a throwback to maybe like a 97 or 98 version of Bowie. Just really, really fantastic.
Yeah. So this show is when this tour became president, this set. And, I think that's when people knew that they were back, at least for the time being.
Right.
Until we found out the next spring or whatever from Charlie Rose that they were actually, that was not going to continue. So they go from Cincinnati to East Rutherford to hit up the Continental Airlines Arena, which, not a lot of shows there. One in February of 03, one in June of 03, and that's it, which is maybe a little surprising, but I guess in the New York, Philly, New Jersey area, there's plenty of places to play and they don't really need to go out to New Jersey.
Yeah. And I think this was actually the only time Fish ever played there, right?
I think there was another, maybe it was.
I think maybe Trey played there with like Dave and friends or something like that, but I don't know that.
Got it. So this was the only one. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I don't believe they had ever played there before. Oh, you know what I think you're seeing is that they sang the Star Spangled Banner before a game of the NBA Finals.
Okay. Well, that was better than this show.
Yep.
So people are still like really pissed off about this show.
Yeah. People get very fiery about this. This was another one of the comments when we talked a couple weeks ago on social media about, you know, your winter 03 memories. A lot of people that were very angry about this, including our partner in pod, Dave Goldstein from Beyond the Pond, who was particularly vocal about how much he hated this show. I always joke, a good friend of mine, Doug, who I've seen a lot of fish shows with, he saw his first show ever at this show. And is, you know, of course, he had a great time because it was a fish show, but he was like, yeah, you know, even I knew that was like, it was a very strange thing. And so if you're not familiar with the show, what we're talking about is that this is the show where B.B. King sat in, and that actually, like, just that fact is really, really cool. I mean, you'd think like, hey, B.B. King came out and sat in with the band, and that's amazing. And I think it probably would have been amazing if it wasn't for the fact that it takes up an hour of the show. Like,
it's a really long time.
I forgot about that, because when I listened to this, I haven't listened to the show in years, and I was like, I remember that it was like a little bit boring, but like, it couldn't have been that bad. Come on, it's B.B. King. And as I was listening to it, I kept having to go back and like re-add up the times of all the tracks for this thing, and I was like, I can't believe how long he was out on stage, because even like in my memory, it was maybe like 20 minutes that he was on stage or something like that. But it's just like, it's an hour of just like blues jamming, and then B.B. would talk for a little while, and then they get back to some blues jamming. And I'm sure that it was a thrill for the band, but I think just at this point where we talked about these amped up crowds on this tour, having to sit through that for an hour was probably pretty excruciating.
Thank you.
The one thing I'd say, and I went back and listened to the whole thing too, the hearing Phish play with B.B. King, Thrill Is Gone, with a pretty cool jam was great. And if that was like, if it was that and one other song and it was like 13 minutes, that it probably would have a much different reputation. I will say that the Down With Disease that opens this first set really, really, it seems like they're, you know, ready to rock. And Fishman is really just killing it from the beginning. And it seemed like that was going to be the, you know, I'm sure if you were there and that Down With Disease opener, you're like, this is going to be another great show, especially if you had come from Cincinnati. But yeah, it's a little bit of a buzzkill. However, Jonathan has offered a manifesto alternative take that I would like to now read. Alternative take. A certified living legend, the king of the blues, recognizes and respects your band enough to go to East Rutherford, New Jersey and sit in. He wants to do that. They want him to do that and are right properly honored. This is literal once in a lifetime moment. Cherish it. To the people who complain about that experience, I say shut the fuck up. How many shows did Phish play in spitting distance of New York City that tour? 3. One had BB fucking King sit in, and a pretty solid Phish only set 2. Another has a notable tweezer, I believe, and the other was in Philly, whatever. The people who complain about this as if something was taken for them by the presence on stage by, allow me to say once more, a living legend, are showing their entitlement. The only guarantee at a Phish show is a unique experience. Experience delivered. Yes, I wish I were there. Thank you, Jonathan, for that. That's good.
Yeah.
It's an alternative take.
Jonathan, keep in mind, Jonathan is under the influence of a lot of heavy cold medicines right now. So, you know, you can take this with a few grains of salt. I agree with him to a certain extent. I would say it's probably wasn't quite the to-do that he makes it out to be, because Trey had played with B.B. King in that IMAX movie, like right before this, right?
Mm.
I think that was like within a year or two before this. And I
forgot about that.
You mean, for all we know, B.B. King lives in East Rutherford. So like, I mean, you know, maybe he was just like walking down the street and they were like, hey, B.B., you know, you want to play, man? And he's like, oh,
he was like,
get Lucille. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. He was like, whatever. The second set does have some pretty good jamming. I think at least the twist is really good. And I guess maybe that's it.
It's pretty much the twist. Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, once again, strange placements. Haley's Comet. Okay. Like that. And it's pretty good Haley's.
Yeah.
Doesn't even really get into the ending of Haley's before it starts jamming. Which is good. Harry Hood. Okay. Early in the second set, but that's cool. But then you've got Heavy Things, and then a twist with a nice jam. Then All of These Dreams.
Yeah.
Waves. Beautiful. Okay. Jamming again, Sample in a Jar, Chalk Dust Torture. And then you encore with Farmhouse.
It's a good Farmhouse.
It is a very good Farmhouse, but it's still Farmhouse still encore. Farmhouse.
All right. So, man, this tour is just crazy. So people are so upset. And luckily, Matt, that wasn't your first show. But the next night from Philadelphia was your first show.
This was my first show, February 25th at the Spectrum in Philly. And I think we're going to spend a little time talking about this on HF Pod Plus.
Yes, with one of our friends and supporters who really loves this show and wants to talk about it. But the one thing I want to ask you, Matt, is just what your kind of thoughts were going in. I know you had said you've been waiting for a while to see them. What was it like going in there and seeing them for the first time, and did it live up to your expectations?
Yeah, I mean, this was at the time the biggest concert I had ever been to in my life. I mean, I was waiting for this for years. I had been a fan of the band. By this point, Phish was my favorite band and had been for several years. I had studied so much of the back catalog of, you know, concert audience recordings and things like that. I mean, I was really, really well ingrained in the whole thing, knowledgeable, had listened to a lot of stuff. I had seen Trey Band maybe like 6 or 7 times over the couple of years before this. And, you know, so I was like ready. I was educated. I was super excited. You know, going to my hometown, Philadelphia, Spectrum, still, you know, one of my favorite places to have ever seen music. Great, great time on Shakedown that day, you know, got the whole experience. It was freaking cold. I think it had snowed the day before. You know, did a lot of driving because I was at school at Penn State at that point. So I like drove down for the show, saw the show, drove back the next morning to catch early morning classes. Like, it was a big thing. And I think I'm glad in the grand scheme of things that when I saw this show, it was my first show, because mm-hmm. I was so excited about everything that, I think pretty much anything, they could have done anything. It could have been the BB King show from, you know, from the night before. And I would have been through the moon, over the moon. You know, so excited about it. In retrospect, it's an okay show. It suffers from a lot of the stuff we've talked about in terms of like weird song placement and things like that. But there is a really cool jam out of Theme from the Bottom in the second set. It's kind of like reminded me almost later on of the 2013 AC Atlantic City version of Theme from the Bottom that had all the Kush Bush stuff in it.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll say, like, this feeling that I had that night, which kind of continued throughout 2.0, was that, you know, I had spent so much time listening to Phish and watching, at that time, whatever videos were available, looking at pictures, trying to understand what the whole experience was like. And of course, everybody tells you, like, oh, no, 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 like, you'll never get it until you're actually there. Like, it's so much different when you're in the room. And I tell younger, newer fans that today, like, right, like, you can listen to a million tapes, but until you actually get in the room, you don't know what the experience is like. And so when I got there and I saw this show, it was a lot different than what I expected. And now I can look back at it and say, like, yeah, that's because of some of the weirdness that this 2.0 era had around it. But at the time I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this actually seeing Phish is different than I thought. This is not what I thought that the pacing and flow of a Phish show would feel like. And that happened to me with a lot of 2.0 shows. Really all the 2.0 shows that I saw, I kind of kept coming back to that feeling. So it was weird. Like, once they came back in 2009, I remember at the Hampton shows being like, oh yeah, this is what I always thought it was going to feel like. Like, this is what I was actually like expecting to happen back then, that just always kind of caught me off guard in that era. And it started with this night. It's a strange show, but it's, you know, there's some good memories for me for sure.
That's awesome. And yeah, we will break it down and listen to some more of it on HF Pod Plus. I had, this sounds really bad, but I had sort of forgotten that I went to this show, but I was there too. And I obviously don't have as many memories as you do. And I don't know why. I drove up, I think, for the night from DC, and maybe went back after the show because I was just out of college and didn't have money to stay places. I don't even know, but I don't even really remember the show at all. It's weird. I wasn't like on drugs or anything that I remember, but maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah, anyway. there was not like a ton that was memorable about it.
Yeah.
I will say I have one. Well, I'll share it for I'll save it for HF Pod Plus. But I do have a funny story about how I got my tickets for that show and everything. But you'll have to hear it over there. We'll go in depth.
All right. So one thing I want to mention a tweet that we got from Atara, who's at Velvet Sea Waiter on Twitter, part of the Yem blog convo, that asked for memories from this tour. She told one about, I guess they were on their way from this show to the next show when one of their friends stopped at a Subway, and a guy in their crew picked up a person who they called Subway Girl, and she quit her job, called her mom for some clothes. The mom brought her clothes, and then she got in the car and went on tour with them. just really great. This is great stuff. We need to do more of this asking the our friends for memories.
Yeah.
I also want to just read more manifestos. So if we can figure out how to make that a standard part of this.
Kush Supply Co. or Kushco is our wonderful Osiris sponsor and partner, who also happens to be the largest producer of packaging products for the cannabis industry. As medical and recreational cannabis continue to be legalized, One Leader has emerged as the go-to company to produce state-compliant packaging for cannabis, and that's Kushco. What does that mean? States have varying laws about how marijuana can be packaged. They need to be childproof, comply with labeling requirements, and so on. Kush knows all the regulations for every state, but the packaging doesn't have to be ugly. Kushco works with producers to create their own branding on amazingly innovative boxes, tubes, bottles, and other packages, so they look amazing and function extremely well. Kushco also produces vaping hardware and supplies. If you've been in a cannabis dispensary lately, you've definitely seen Kushco products. Kushco has offices in 10 states, plus Canada and China. Please go to kushcosupplyco.com/podcast to learn more about what they're up to. And we thank them again for being a wonderful Osiris partner.
So the next show is 226 from Worcester. We went into depth on this show on HF Pod Plus probably 4 or 5 months ago with Jeff, who's a supporter and really loved this show. And people really, really went nuts about this show at the time, and I think still do about some parts of it. Right, Matt?
Yeah. So that I got, you know, after having seen my first show the night before, I got my first taste of the true Phish experience, which is being pissed that you missed a show that you wanted to see by one night. Because all I wanted was to see you enjoy myself in my first show. And then they opened with it the next night, when I was not there, and, you know, played a pretty interesting first set that was kind of something that people were speculating a lot leading up to this, which was most of the first set was made up of songs from their side projects that they played with during the hiatus. So you had, you know, Mike's song Clone that they had done with Leo Kottke, Drifting from Trey Band, Blue Skies, which is a Poor Tornado song, I believe, and then Final Flight from Viking Blood, all in that first set. So it's a pretty unique set and really fun. And at the time, I think people were in general freaking out about like how unique that was and how cool it was. That excitement kind of got trumped a couple of nights later, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. And the MoMA dance in this first set is, I think, what people mention the most besides those sort of new songs that you mentioned. I think to me the Ghost in the second set is my favorite jam of this show. But the MoMA dance is a great version, and I think rightly held up as a great, you know, jam for this tour. So I don't know. It's interesting because there's some like momentum that they're hitting at this point. I think these are the last three shows of the tour, right? This one and the next two, and all three of them are really, really good shows. But this show's pretty solid throughout. Not a lot of down points like some of the other shows we've talked about. Although there's a little bit, but I feel like they're at this point just a little bit more locked in.
Yeah, it's a great show, and I think were it not for what happened in the following show, and even to a certain extent in the tour closure at Greensboro, it would get a lot more acclaim. But it's kind of sandwiched in a strange spot of the tour, and doesn't necessarily get noticed as quite as much as you might think. I actually completely forgot about that set two segment of the Ghost into Lowrider into Makasupa into Yamar, which is really awesome. Of course, then we get back to strange placement with a, you know, mid second set Gaiuti, but that's okay.
Yeah. You're going to get a mid second set something on this tour.
Yeah.
So the Ghost is just, what a nice groove in that jam. It's a really, really nice. So the next, we got to go to Nassau. I don't know why I chose to go from DC to come up just for the Philly show when I could have gone to Nassau, but you know, what did I know at that point? It's a little bit closer, so I guess that's why, but that's kind of dumb.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. I mean, of course, I was still in college and broke, and it was tough to get tickets for this tour, as we talked about, but I feel the same way. It was like Nassau was the same striking distance from Penn State as Philly was, and I could have actually gone to Philly, gone back, caught class for a couple of days, and then gone to Nassau, which is the decision I would certainly make these days, but I was just a noob back then. I didn't know any better.
So this show, I mean, it's there's not, we can't really even talk about it because there's like too much. It should be a multi-part show just on 22803. It's one of the best according to Fishnet. It's ranked 36th ever, which doesn't seem fair somehow. There's several like 2015 shows that are ranked ahead of it in terms of the rating, but that's just, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. So I'm not going to say that's definitive, but I think that's low for this show, especially when there's two of the all time best versions of two different songs in a show.
Yeah, for sure. And to say nothing of the bust out of all bust outs.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Yeah.
There have been bigger bust outs in terms of number of days or number of shows that have happened before and since. But, you know, once again, if you were not a fan back then and experiencing this, for as long as I had been a fan leading up to this and interfacing with people on the internet talking about stuff, the band playing Destiny Unbound was like, that was like the ultimate bust out. It seemed like they were never going to play it again. They had actually kind of made comments in interviews years before that seemed to indicate that they never wanted to play it again. It was always the song that would come up as like the dream show, like, you know, I'm going to miss the show where they play Destiny Unbound. It was just like on every single fan's mind. And when they played that, it was like the biggest deal. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I can't even think of another bust out that was like on the same level of this.
No, I think it's the most notable for sure. And for people who don't have a, strange, sense of this history, in the 11/22/97 show from Hampton at the beginning of the second set, which is just an incredible show, like most from that tour, before they play Haley's, there's a crowd chant for Destiny Unbound, and Trey sort of makes fun of it, and he's like, sounds like a death chant or something like that. So people, you know, even back to 97, were trying to get Fish to go back to Destiny Unbound, and they hadn't until this point. And one of our responses from Twitter at the Sloth TT said one of the most memorable moments of that show was watching fans sprint out of the bathroom once Destiny started, which I can imagine seems accurate.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the other thing that I figured out from the the Twitter conversation around this is I feel like Nassau is one of those shows where there's a lot of people who were at Nassau. Like, if Nassau Coliseum holds like 15,000 people, maybe, there was probably about 50,000 people who claimed to have been at Nassau Coliseum that night. Just as many who claimed that it was their first show. So, good congratulations to the people who actually did have their first show and chose a little bit better than I did that week, or got a little bit luckier than I did. But this is definitely one of those shows that there's a lot of yarns being spinned around.
Matt, in if we have to pit them against each other, the gin or the tweezer from this, or is that not fair?
Oh, the tweezer for sure. I mean, I don't even. I mean, the gin's great, but I mean, the tweezer is just, you know, maybe 25 of the best minutes of playing ever.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's perfect. It's like it's inspiring at times. It's like it's jamming. It's majestic. It's perfect. It's a perfect piece of fish improv. One of the best tweezers ever, of course. One of the best pieces of improv they've done. So I don't really know what else to say. Is there anything else we can say about it?
No, I mean, not about the tweezer. I mean, I guess if you want to look at some of the other spots of the show that maybe don't get quite as much recognition, you know, we talked about the Destiny Unbound and the bathtub gin. You know, in terms of oddball songs, I play Sleep, which is amazing. I love Sleep. It doesn't get played enough. Back on the Train is really, really good. Don't overlook the Back on the Train, which is probably one of the best Back on the Trains ever. Tweezer lands into Soul Shakedown Party. I mean, you know, the antithesis of what they were doing other spots on the tour, where, you know, they didn't go into like Waste or something, or all of These Dreams or whatever. After that monster tweezer, they go into a huge bust out of Soul Shakedown Party. And then that goes into a monster David Bowie, which is incredible as well.
Really monstrous. And then a really nice Harry Hood to cap the set, which is, if you could write a set list for a set two, it might look like this, maybe without the round room, but the tweezer into a great bust out, into a great Bowie and a great Hood to close it. It's just, man, beautiful.
Yep.
And don't forget that there was some San Jose teases in there too.
Of course. This was the era of San Jose. I mean,
it was,
you know, like probably 2001 to 2004. In my opinion, you're hard pressed to find a jam when Trey doesn't play that lick.
Yeah. So we can't even do 228 justice on this episode. So just, if you haven't heard it, then I don't know what you're doing, but it's amazing. So then they go down to Greensboro. This is the last show of the tour. Again, so strange. After this show in Greensboro, they won't be back until what, July, when they play in Phoenix. So
yeah,
it's crazy. 12 shows and then they're out. But this I drove down to this one from DC. I do remember this one. So that's cool. This was a good show. The first set was really fun. I remember the foam being just, it was just such a nice, beautiful, I remember being very, very cold outside and the foam, and there was something about it. I think it was Paige and Trey on that foam is just really, really memorable, and a great, great middle of the first set song, you know, but again, you got some strange placements here, but the first set I thought was really good.
Yeah. You've got another, Sample in a Jar set closer here.
Beautiful.
This was, I think, as the tour closers tend to be, this was probably a pretty good kind of amalgamation of like all of the things that they did on the tour. And particularly the good ones. The first set is pretty first setty, which is actually strange for this tour because there was a lot of weird choices in the first sets around the tour. And it also doesn't necessarily have like a big marquee jam. The Waves is really nice, but you know, it's not anything to write home about. But that foam is definitely notable, as you pointed out.
And then the second set, Matt, it's a long second set, a lot of songs, not at all like the night before or some of these five song sets, but you know, some up and down, but pretty high energy throughout, including a great Piper 2001.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of this is almost like a Saturday night special, and it was, it was Saturday night.
It was.
And big crowd. Greensboro Coliseum is a huge building. I think it holds like 30,000 people.
Oh, wow.
It's because they typically just used it for like the ACC basketball championships and stuff like that. So it's like and only time that they ever played there. too.
Yeah.
Down in the Piedmont. But then I think what you look at for this show is probably the encore, right? The first tube, a yem into Proud Mary in the vocal jam.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is it's a party, you know, this second set, like you said, Saturday night, it was a party. It was a tour closer and the yem, you know, encore. That's about all you could ask for. The Proud Mary vocal jam, people do point that out. I don't really remember that well, but I guess it was probably pretty cool. But that was only the second time they've ever played that song, so that's cool. But the You Enjoy Myself, it's just, man, when that comes in the encore, as we remember from Hampton last fall, it's what a great way to end a show. So this was Jonathan Wendt as well, and Jonathan went to the show, according to his notes, in a clown car with his wife and friends, and they had a good time. Jonathan calls the vocal jam of Proud Mary tremendous and probably one of the greatest Phish encores I've ever witnessed. So there we go. That's a good way to end it. So yeah. Matt, what's now that we've gone through this tour, what's sort of a takeaway for you?
I think it's a really strong tour. And I'll probably go back to some of these shows more than I had in the past. If I'm going to listen to stuff from 03, it's typically been from the summer, which in my memory was a stronger tour, but I think this gives it a run for its money. You do start to see some of the, like I said on the last episode, some of the problem areas, botched composed sections, weird pace into the shows, lots of downtime between songs, some nights that you're just kind of scratching your head, trying to figure out what's going on with the band. It was a lot better than I remembered. Obviously, you know, Nassau and stuff like that, you know, everybody knows about, but some of the shows like Chicago, the Vegas run, definitely a lot stronger than I had remembered.
Yeah, I think if you take the Nassau show as the show that you listen to from this tour, you definitely won't get a real authentic sense for how this tour played out, because the Tweezer and the Bathtub Gin from Nassau are both, they're not like that crazy energy that you hear in so many of those other jams we've discussed, right? I mean, they're beautiful and there's a lot of great jamming in it, but they're more melodic. They're a little bit more exploratory. Whereas that was one of my takeaways, was going back to this tour, like the Antelopes and the Bowies and the Pipers and the Twist. And there's just, man, Trey was just playing the tempo and the energy and the ferocity. It was just pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you look at a set list and you see a Bowie or an Antelope, you probably almost gloss over it. Or if you wanted to listen to highlights from a show, you may not even listen to them because you pretty much know what's going to happen. And not that any of the Bowies or Antelopes or even Rebas from this tour got too far out there or anything like that. They were relatively standard versions of the songs, but the playing is just exciting. You know, I mean, they're really tearing into them and drawing them out a little bit longer, and they're just a really fun listen.
Yeah. Matt, will Fish ever go back to Nassau?
I hope they do. It's been renovated since they played there last. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the LA Forum, how it's like a concert only venue. So, I think that would be cool. I think that their penchant and for an agreement with Madison Square Garden kind of makes that difficult. But although I think MSG actually owns Nassau now too, but, so I don't know. I think maybe, you know, they don't want to take the Long Island Railroad out there and from Manhattan. They'd rather just, you know, just take the subway to the Garden and play or whatever.
Right.
I don't know. I mean,
a cool place.
Maybe they can borrow Billy Joel's helicopter because that's what he does, to go from Long Island to Manhattan. Yeah, no, I'd love to see them out there. I'd love to see them play down in Greensboro again, maybe slightly selfishly, cause we've got, family down in that area. I think that there's some places I'd love to see them play at the Spectrum again, but the Spectrum got destroyed, so can't do that.
That is not likely. Yeah, I saw one Fish show at Nassau Coliseum in 2003, and it was not the February one, which is a little bit sad. But I'd like to go back after the Island tour. I wanted to go back. But okay, so we appreciate everyone listening. Send us thoughts, comments, feedback. Send us manifestos if you have them so we can read them, because that was fun. And we're looking forward to coming back with a really good and interesting 150th episode. And yeah, thanks everybody for your support and feedback. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts or however you listen to us. That'd be helpful. And we are available on all the internet, right, Matt?
All of it, everywhere.
Everywhere.
And I'm also available right now, even though you're listening to this through the magic of the internet. I am traveling to Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
Say hi in Mexico. I think we're all out of stickers, so I may not have anything to give you other than a high five and a hug or something like that. Just let me know if you're germ free before I hug you, because, you know.
Yeah, you got to stay germ free.
Don't want to catch anything.
No, you don't.
But drinks on me if we see each other in Mexico.
Right. Well, have fun. I'll be here in the cold, cold, cold winter. So hope everybody has a good couple of weeks. We'll see you back here, and hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. Keep on rocking.